This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Welcome to Folklore from the Dance Floor. I'm Aoife Nakana. I've been a clubber, music collector and DJ for many years. I've been collecting stories and memories from some of the many Irish clubbers in an exploration of the dance music movement in Ireland since the late 70s. I hope you will join me in this six-part series to uncover the club movement of Ireland from its roots in the late 70s to its explosion in the late 80s, up to what we have today. We will meet some of the rockers and ravers who have coloured this culture over the last four decades. In part six, the last of this series, we look back at the last few decades of dance music and compare it today. But let's stay with some club history as Greg Dowling, Emer O'Connor and Owen Cregan remember Wax. But first up, let's hear from Berlin-based producer from Cork, Chimera.
My experiences of Ireland were very good, actually, because when I came to Dublin, I started buying records in Selecta, where Simon Conway was looking after the techno and electro and house section. And, you know, I got very friendly with him, and he introduced me to loads of great music. And I literally would just walk into the shop and he'd pull up, he'd know exactly what I want to hear, and he'd have it there ready and waiting for me. And then he started running with Giles, he started running Electric City, and for me that was a really important club. It was like Thursday nights from 2003 till 2009 or something, and they brought really just, I mean, the cream of techno, house and electro producers there. So that was, for that reason, like, Dublin was really important for me in developing my own style of house and techno, and for putting me onto the path for where I am today, like, just through that scene. So I can't, you know, I mean, I was making lots of music before I left Ireland already. So for me, it was beneficial. I mean, I think the groundwork was done, but I mean, definitely moving away opened up other possibilities for me, for sure.
I loved the Wax days with the Body Tonic guys. We played some amazing gigs. Gigs with Tracy standing on the windowsill behind us singing songs, you know?
Wax was fantastic. Like, Wax was some of the best nights ever. And Body Tonic were so good. It was just great house music, great vibes. It was run by clubbers for clubbers. And they did a great job and they put a lot of effort in, you know. And they always looked after us. They always gave us a heads up if they had a special guest coming over or whatever. And they, I heard what happened was that they went and did a massive proposal for John Reynolds at the time when he was renovating the Red Box and the Pod and turning it into the Pod, the Lobby Bar and Crawdaddy and Tripod. And they put a proposal to try and go get in there as promoters, and he took them on then, and then they took over the nights in the Pod, and they did a great job there as well. Wax was by far my favourite. Like, we saw Ralph Lawson and Ben Watt, and just so many great nights. But what, there was the other promoters in there as well, but nobody was as good as Body Tonic, and to this day they still do a great job.
Every time Fish Go Deep played for us at Wax, it was a huge night. And I remember the first night, it was Shane Johnson played on his own, and I was pretty sick, so I was planning to go home early, but I was blown away by the atmosphere. They just had a knack for playing deep house in a particular way that I've only ever heard Fish Go Deep do. We booked them, I'd say, twice a year for a good number of years, and it was always a roadblock full by 12, and just an amazing atmosphere that I think was quite uniquely Irish because of their history in Cork and the way they play deep house. It was around the time they released their big track, the Dennis Ferrer remix, and we didn't have a stage or anything in Wax, just a small DJ booth, so we decided to get her to stand up on the window ledge, and it was just crazy. People were going nuts, the whole place was packed. Again, it was one of those nights that would be very hard to replicate. Disco Knots, we used to get them in for if we were doing a multi-room gig in Wax, We had a shoebox disco, and occasionally we did some stuff upstairs in Spy. They also played for us a couple of times at Pogo in the Pod. They were always great fun DJs, really nice guys, and played a brilliant selection right across the board. We've a good connection with the guys from Waterford. Gavin Boyce, a few years ago, was putting out some very good tracks, and we had him up to play a few times. When Republic was going, we had the guys up from there. We used to do kind of a club exchange, and we'd play down there, we'd tie it in with a barbecue and a football match, and then they'd come up here and we'd do the same. We were always looking for new ways to excite people and inject energy into the club night, because when you're running a weekly club, it can get stale very quickly. So we needed a reason to keep people interested and to keep ourselves interested. So one day we decided to have Hysterio play live, and we set up a tiny little makeshift stage with milk crates and a bed sheet and wired wires across the roof of the dance floor, and we had DJs playing in the usual spot for the first course of the night. And then we announced, I think it was like 2 o'clock, right, we have Hysterio playing now, and they're going to be playing over there. And 50% of the crowd turned around, the other 50% didn't get it and still stayed facing the DJ box where we were standing, and they were going crazy and getting excited and egging us on, and we were like, we're not actually playing, it's over there, turn around.
My name is Connor Lynch and I work for Vitalik. Like, some people may shoot me down for this, but Irish production hadn't matured the way it has now. I mean, there's a wealth of talent releasing great records nowadays that would give me a reason to play loads of Irish music. I mean, John Daly is the one who stands out for me, and I've been playing his records since 2006, and the TR1 guys as well, who we release records with, like, I play their tunes all the time as well. But I mean, back then it was almost always American records with a small, or I'd say 60-40 maybe US records to English records by and large, and then you probably have some people like Squirrel People who are from Belgium and other guys like that.
Cyan, I with Graham, I knew him from working in Carbon Records and Urban Outfitters, and never knew until about a year later that he was a producer. He seemed to keep it very quiet, and then one day I was buying some records and he goes, oh, this is my record on Poker Flat. And I was like, what? You're on Poker Flat? And he's like, yeah. And Poker Flat at the time was Steve Wood's label, who, that was at the start of the whole rise of the Berlin sound and the minimal sound. And we started to get him to play at Pogo, and he became a resident, and started to release more and more tracks, and things started to go really well from then. He moved abroad, and I think he's still playing worldwide every weekend.
After Body Tonic left Wax, the MySpace generation began. Music production and performing live alongside a DJ was becoming normal in Irish clubs. And here Al Keegan remembers such clubs like Hospital at Wax.
Hospital came, I suppose Hospital came in the midst of, Assy Disco, really, was it? Like, basically Hospital was a collaboration between Tom Lynn and Al Kennington, who had a history, you know, doing art collaborations together because they went to college together. And I suppose then Hospital was a collaboration very much between Al Kennington and Tom Lynn, who had, I suppose, discovered dance music and clubbing through nights like Backlash, 1210, not so much Assy Disco towards the end. They wouldn't have frequented Assy Disco at all, but they did, I suppose. They would have been regular faces on Backlash and stuff like that, was their hangout. I suppose they seen what you could do if you had a group of mates, as a promoter, what you could do if you could bring people, you know, and they had a really big core group of mates. So they already had the crowd. They just needed the venue and the DJs and the space, you know, and they could do quite well out of it, you know, and they did. I mean, I think they really just capitalized on the fact that, you know, they were very social people. They had massive parties in their houses every weekend. They had a captive audience to promote, to fill a club, you know. And like, I mean, they did probably one of the biggest gigs in they did a big castle party, and I mean, like, sold it out, like, thousands of people, Glenard Castle. And that was a big thing for them. But I think it did veer off. Al went off and did his own thing, and like that, Tom carried on doing Hospital. He's since gone on to do Superfast and things like that, you know. Good times, you know, everybody involved. I don't think they ever had an agenda, Tom and Al. It wasn't about, you know, like that. It wasn't a corporate angle, where Body Tonic, I think, maybe changed the game slightly in the sense they applied very much a business structure to a social model, if you will, and like, you know, like the parties for hospital were just about having the crack. And when the party in the club stopped, it was like everyone back to X, Y, or Z's house, you know? And that was their, the ethos there was just like, have a good time. Now, if the lads made a few quid, albeit, but I don't think they'd have it the following week because they were all about the partying, you know?
Desi Balmer weighs the pros and the cons of releasing music, then and now.
There have been a few little labels run the round, but D1, BSBin, and hopefully ourselves would be in there. The main labels that were there before the end of the 90s and remained after. As I say, before that you had Sugar Sweet, you had Mark Heaven is Red. You'd also had Influx and Quadraphonic and stuff. But there's a huge difference between then and now. You know, and a lot of people bemoan the digital generation. It is giving people much more control over what they do. It is giving people much more opportunity to release stuff. But as the Darren said, there's a lot of crop going out. There's a reason we have 14 bits of vinyl out and 120 MP3 releases. And it's not because the other 106 MP3s are worse. It's just financial. Vinyl costs so much money to put out. And you have to, you're taking a huge risk. Where with the MP3 thing, you're not. And as a result, you now have, you must have about 24 labels in Ireland, at least. I've did a bit of consulting work with some lads and helped set up a few of them, like Gobsmacked Records, Battered Records. I even helped Al and Gavin set up Acetone at the beginning. It just seems to be the thing to do now. When we were setting up labels and pushing them, it was something different. You know, it was a bit of a badge of honour. You know, you were actually putting your money where your mouth is and your time, where now it just seems to be, it's an accessory.
My name is Colm Kay and I am a DJ and a producer from Cork City. I have been DJing around Ireland for the last 9-10 years. In Limerick I would have played in the Wicked Chicken, I would have played in Trinity Rooms many moons ago. In Galway I would have been in the GPO, I would have played a couple of times, not really a residency but just guest spots or whatever. And Dublin I played a night with Stevie and covered the odd time in Reraw. I play in Dublin quite a bit with friends of mine called Choice Cuts. They put on gigs and they do web events and all this kind of jazz.
I think back in the day, I was always like, Cork is, I always thought musically there was just this little bit more, like I was able to be into house music as well as being into soul and hip hop and then getting into like the funk and jazz stuff. But you know, your fondest, your earliest memories are maybe always the best ones that you'll keep, and like going into Henry's and places like Telefunken and seeing DJs like LTJ Bookham and DJs like, I suppose, Laurent Garnier and even like Kerry Chandler originally and people like Mark Ray at the time and DJs like that. Just, I suppose, your first time seeing them, and it was in Cork, so I would have loved, because I used to go to Dublin that much, but I love going to Dublin. No, it's maybe because I've got more friends there who are into, like, you know, exactly what I'm doing, and maybe they help me put out my own music as well and help me get me involved in other projects, so it's a bit more universal now, I think. And I love going to Dublin because I was speaking to somebody last night about it, there's so many people there, I suppose it's choice. And I suppose then if you do play like a kind of across the board selection, they're more open to it as well in a way, because there's so many of them, you know, to me personally, but maybe I could be wrong, you know. I think the thing these days is, back then budget was a big thing and still is a big thing, even more so now, but back then you had to buy a lot more gear to get a basic setup, whereas now everybody's got a computer. You can get somebody who will loan you software, or you can download it alternatively. The music is available to be downloaded. The samples that people want to sample from can all be downloaded, and that can be like on a simple internet connection that maybe your parents are paying for. A little bit more accessible, I suppose. Not as easy, because you still got to have the kind of the musical inclination, I suppose, in a way. No, it's a bit easier, and I think it's better as well, because people that maybe would have been driven away from it before because, like, geez, I'd never get into that, I don't have the money, or I couldn't go getting my head around this, they get their head around a program that maybe is very intuitive, and it could result in maybe people being able to do something that they thought they wouldn't have been able to do, or something that might have been very, very difficult to do, because like a lot of the music programs these days are very intuitive, and there's so much help with YouTube. You could literally get a program and sit down for the day and go, right, I want to learn the basics, go onto YouTube or some of the online documentation, and and the forums and boards and stuff, and you know exactly what you want to do, and people will tell you it's great that way. And I think going forward, it's only going to get better, really, I suppose. But the thing is just maintaining the kind of, I suppose, I like the hardware aspect sometimes of music. Like, I don't like everything to be in the computer. I like some of the kind of older vibe and the outboard gear, nice keyboards and stuff like that, but that's just me personally.
Ireland, north, south, east, or west, has a really unhealthy respect for its own artists. Until We Die or something. We all love James Joyce now, but was James Joyce a huge figure in his day? Why did he have to go to France or Austria or Switzerland or wherever he ended up? We don't see the forest for the trees sometimes. Like, what I was saying about the DJs earlier, there's some DJs in Ireland that are amazing. You know, like I said, Robbie Nelson, now he gets gigs. The last time I was speaking to Robbie, he was in Singapore, you know, so that I wish I was doing that gig. But then you look at people like Davey Heels, who I think is a fantastic DJ. And when it comes to DJing, can literally entertain any crowd, but gets gigs here, there and everywhere, now and then. You know, Dublin, Ireland, Belfast, whatever, just seems to think the grass is greener. And if we bring in Graham Park or Dave Clark, that somehow they're better than Johnny Moy, and they're not. We just think they are. Maybe we plan the night out more. Maybe people buy an extra amount of alcohol or drugs that night, and it makes the night better, the memory's stronger. I don't know. Yesterday, when we were sitting with the guys at YouTube, this was an invite to a lot of Dublin labels. Nice and Nasty, D1, Body Tonic, and Sunil Sharp turned up. That was it. All the other labels didn't, and it was opened up to them, you know. Which is a shame, because this was trying to educate us on how to create a YouTube channel and how to create income, when we're all moaning that, God, when you made vinyl, you used to sell, but you put out MP3s, you're selling half a dozen, and 1,000 are being shared for free. I do definitely feel an analogue person in a digital world. You just have to change or move with it, you know. But I changed back to then. God, everything took ages. Like, I'm just thinking that for Mono, the flyers that we got done, or the design in Dublin and print it in London, but I had to get a graphic designer to get me a big, what did you call them, a zip disc, put it in a package, post it, wait till the people got it, get them to phone me, they would then post me back a proof, I would phone them and approve it, then they would print it. Do you know what I mean? Now I can do that in 5 minutes. There's pros and cons to it. I do miss... I DJ mostly with my laptop now out of laziness. A lot of what I want on record either isn't made on vinyl anymore. As I say, I'm getting grumpy. I don't want to carry a record box about. My hands get sore. You know, I maybe sound like I'm weak and infirm, and I'm not, but I'm just lazy that way. When you are sitting in a club, and I was playing last week in Twisted Pepper, it's boring as hell DJing with a laptop. It really is. And even if you're using Traktor and you've got all the movements, it's still... there's a lot of the energy and the fear taken out of it. You know, there used to be a real adrenaline buzz that your record was about to run out, and you couldn't figure out which one would mix into it, you know, where now it's all pre-programmed and just a click of a mouse, you know. I miss that.
Some comparisons there from Desi Balmer. Here are a few more from Michael McKenna, Sean and Michelle O'Neill, Stephen Granger and Greg Dowling.
It's funny, actually. You spend your life listening to people going on about back in the day and things were so much better and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, so many people feel like they peaked in their 20s or something, and now they're just, like, out to pasture. And we do live in one of the most ageist cities in the world, like, you know what I mean? It's like, you're in different countries, you go to clubs, and there's people in their 40s and 50s, like, dancing away to, like, decent music. Not everywhere, but, like, in many places. But here, it's like, if you're over 30, you're not really supposed to go out. And, yeah, the scene isn't as good now, because it's so much bigger that it's spread thinner, whereas before there was less places to go to, so, and everyone went to those places because that's all that was there, and everyone who played music in those places, so it seemed like buzzier, and it was more fun, and the scene was more fun. But musically and you know what I'm into now, I find it a more interesting time now, only because with the internet and SoundCloud and all that kind of stuff, it means, although there's hardly anyone into your scene or what you're into in this city, like worldwide there's enough people for you to have your own little buzz, you know what I mean? More chances of you doing gigs abroad or, you know, having fun things you can do, rather than it just being a small little enclosed scene. That said, a lot of people my generation, they kind of go, oh, you know, it's not a great scene now, or this and the other. But like, to people that are like, you know, in their early 20s, you know what I mean, the same as we were, like, whatever, 15 or so years ago, or probably longer than that, it's great for them. You've got all these pop-up like art collectives and like, you know, young lads taking over bars like on Thomas Street and having their few nights going, and like all these young promoters, and like if we go in we might turn our noses up at the music or whatever, but you know, I'm sure there was an older generation back then who were turning their noses up at what we were into. For all I know, it could be even more healthy now. It's definitely bigger, it definitely sustains more people. It appears to be crap to me because I'm into a certain thing that isn't really supported, because you're at a different age and there's different people around. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the scene was more enjoyable back then, but I think music's in a better place now.
With regard to pubs, you know, I don't want to be saying Faraway Hills are greener and, you know, everything new is bad, which is not. The pubs had a certain individuality, certainly, about them. You know, there were an awful lot of pubs who didn't just concentrate on one thing. You know, you'd have Isaac Bell's, you could have DJ one night or whatever, you could, the Spalpeen Fawnock, there might be a trad session, but there might be a DJ in there the next night. Each bar is very individual. I just find all the bars at the moment are very homogenised, formulated, dire. It's hard to work things in. I know the pressures of owning a bar and all that comes into it, and there was a lot less, say, health and safety and issues that you have to deal with now, so maybe it's harder. But there were definitely nuggets of gorgeous pubs that would really put on stuff, you know.
From a bar point of view, we used to sit down at least once a week and figure out what we were going to be doing in 4 weeks' time regarding entertainment in the pub. We would work all the time at what we were doing. I mean, we had the same situation. We had nights on Friday and Saturday nights where our doors would be closed at 9 o'clock and be full. But it was a small bar now, so whatever. But the main difference, I think, being that in those days, last orders were 11:30. So everybody was full of drink, in a pub, listening to great music. Oh, we'll all go up to Henry's. So they could go up there and bop away till 2:30 or whatever, 2:00. Whereas now, you've got your late night bars everywhere, so no one's going to pay money to go into a club.
It is absolutely wrecked.
It's wrecked everything.
Everything.
And then, on, like, say in somewhere like Cork, most of the bars are owned by one or two groups now. So they're just buying bars, putting in managers, putting in their staff. They're not really concerned about working it, or, well, they are, obviously they have mortgages to pay, but they're not hands-on like we used to be. We had to work really, really hard at whatever. And we would sit down and you know, my staff were all in UCC or wherever, you know, they were all part-time students, etc. And we'd sit down with them and we'd go, what would work? What can we do? I mean, we did things like, we used to have a night with the Martini Brothers, which was Jim O'Mahony and Andrew, wasn't it?
Andrew McDonough.
And they used to just play Easy Listening. And the idea was that we'd all come in Hawaii shirts, and I covered all the walls in the bar with tinfoil, and, you know, we worked all the time.
And so I mean about homogenisation of the bars, you know,
they're all the same.
Conglomerates, no.
There's no personality behind the counter, you know, in our day.
Yeah, it's probably very hard for
you. You had a character behind the bar, now you just have pretty clones.
Cute clones.
So, you know, that element is gone. And I'm sure if it was, you know, if people got back to where we were at then, that people would come. I mean, they would. I know they would. But, you know, it's just...
I think we'd still find it tough.
You'd find it tough.
But not as tough with the licensing laws. Like, the bar open until 2 o'clock would definitely have hit Henry's. A percentage, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, it could be the difference between that mad Saturday night or not, you know?
And I was looking at an article I wrote the other day in 1993, someone put it up on the internet, and it was the same kind of, I had the same optimism and idealism about the music and about everything, the same passion. But at the same time, like, we're just doing shows and running a venue, trying to do something good musically, and I learned an awful lot of stuff, and I'll try to pass that on to the people who are the same. I can still see the same hunger and wide-eyedness that I had then and that I still have now. in people, and you can help people in that way. It's just trying to put on good shows, or if you're DJing a good gig, or if you're in a band or whatever. And it's the same, really. Obviously, things have changed. All the older people say everything used to be brilliant. All the younger people haven't known anything else, since some of them in the top 40 and stuff. So it's just a matter of trying to get a few people to literally come in the door and maybe work with that and see what happens, you know what I mean? Like, I grew up in an era where we were angry. Rap was angry, for example. Like, rap is a good reflection of society all through the years. When rap got horrible, society did. Cocaine and bling and how many yachts have you got? You don't want to hear about that in a rap record. Whereas when rap came out back in 77, or when I was a kid, before I was listening to it, obviously, they were on about, like, I'm Superman, I've got all the money, I've got all the girls. But you knew it was a joke back then. When they did get all the money and the girls, rap became... it just became pathetic, like, in a wider sense. Obviously, there was still good stuff. And society is like that, and the club scene was like that. All this cocaine and super clubs and all that kind of crap. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was on the cusp of a little bit of that too for a while, but it was a bit unsettling, and I'm glad it's gone, to be honest. It's like Fianna Fáil. The music community, and that's one thing I feel so strongly about today. I'd have pockets of music community people around the world, whether they're people that I've worked with in Manchester or Leeds, or people in Chicago, Detroit, people in Dublin and Limerick and Galway, and we're so close. We are the people of, we're not special people, we're not amazingly talented, but we have a certain passion that's not really about, it's a kind of thing that we have our community, and it doesn't have boundaries. And we're the kind of people that we're going to do our thing together. Like, I'm going to do it in Cork because that's where I'm from and that's what I like. But there's people doing it everywhere. And in the venue I have, I just hope we can be around to be still doing that in 10 and 20 years. I'd be delighted to be doing it and do a little bit of DJing and do a little bit of this, radio, that, or whatever. There's no real massive kind of game plan, but it's always been the plan to do something that will have longevity and that is proper, you know?
Everybody knows everything, you know. The internet has all this information. They all have downloaded the mixes. There's so much music that, like, it's impossible sometimes for a track to kind of breathe or take hold. It's just, I suppose it's just different. It's just, how long is it now? It's a 20 years a thing is going. So, like, you know, so they could reach out to more people. You know, you can download the mixes, you can get everything's available. It's a totally different thing now. You know, like before, it was, you either had, you know, two record players and maybe two CD players. Now you've got Traktor and Serato and Ableton. It's like, you know, some guys are, you know, they're cutting up a piece of music live, basically, and looping it and making it into something else. And it's another type of DJing. It's, I don't know, is it even DJing anymore? It's just like, it's almost like a performance where they have a certain amount of music in it. I mean, if you get deep into Traktor and watch the kind of Richie Hawtin and these people, I know there's a lot of controversy people don't like because it syncs. You know, it basically mixes for you. But while it's doing that, you can do other things. So, like, the computer DJing is like a different thing again. I mean, it's a progression. You know? It's like, some people like it, some people don't. I find it quite interesting because you see some guys who do both. You know, we're still playing records and CDs, and then they might have a Traktor set up as well, where they're doing effects and loops and doing kind of fun things with it, you know.
To use the word theatre is actually how to describe it. Like, back in the old days, there was a lot of magic and a lot of theatre by the DJ holding up the record in the sky, and you're like, and he's kind of banging on, like, and then, you know, sometimes they might be just scratching, and like, and then there might be mistakes as well, but it all added to the intensity of the atmosphere. And now today things are so precise. And you know, you don't really need to know how to mix anymore, and most people don't know how, but sure, the computer programs will mix for you, which I think is cheating, but there's other great things as well, and there's still some amazing nights and amazing DJs going on today, like, and I mean, I still go out clubbing, like, I still travel to go clubbing. I'd go to Ibiza, I'd go to Berlin, Dublin and Ireland, Irish clubbing, like, a lot of magic because the clubbers are so free, and I think that's down to licensing laws as well, because we know we're on this short leash that we absolutely go bonkers for that 3 hours that we're in there, you know. And the DJs were always, you know, blown away. International acts that come over, they couldn't get over how intense the atmosphere would be in an Irish. Irish club in comparison with any other clubs in the world. So I think that we shouldn't have this nanny state. I think that we're all responsible adults, and you know, we've got jobs to go to, so you can't take the piss. But also, people have different lives now, and some people have to work at night, and some people have different shift work or whatever, and they want to have a social life too, and they want some release. And that's what going out and dancing for a night is. It's release from what the stresses and the pressures of everyday life.
Here are some more views on the Irish licensing laws from Cyan, Greg Dowling, Trevor O'Shea and John Mahan.
I think if Ireland wants to have a good youth culture and a profitable business model for nightlife, they're going to have to change back to what we had originally, 5:30 at least. And that's quite in line with other European cities. I mean, all they have to do is look at the booming trade in Berlin for club culture. I mean, you, on any given weekend, it's full of techno tourists, all young people spending their hard-earned money in clubs and nightlife.
I don't know. What's it all about? I mean, can anybody explain it to me? I was playing in Portugal. I was playing in Lisbon last Saturday night. The guys told me I was on at 3:30. They picked me up at 2:00. I said, what time am I on till? They said 7:30. And I said, great, brilliant, you know? So you're coming, you're in Ireland. I'm playing in Cork tonight. We'll have to be finished at 2 on the dot. I mean, come on. What's that about? So they throw all the people onto the streets at the same time, and the guards say there's loads of trouble in town. Well, fucking of course there is. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, they're treating us like children. I don't know what they think we're going to do. We're all going to go mental, and like we'd be lying on the ground, you know, drinking and drinking and drinking. That's not going to happen, you know. People obviously, if you change the laws and left it be a bit looser, I think people are responsible enough. They'll cop on.
My view on it is, this is what I've felt since day one. There should be late pubs and there should be clubs. And that basically, whether a pub shuts at, say, 12, 12:30, late bar at 2, and a club at 6. So basically, maybe they pay different license fees or different extension fees based on what they feel is going to work. And what I would imagine would happen is, over, say, maybe a 12-month period, it probably would be a little bit more difficult to handle some of the places that went late. But I have a feeling that a lot of places would go, I'm not going to bother opening until 6. It's not worth our while. I mean, we open as a club every Friday, Saturday till, you know, 2:30. And this is one of the things that people don't know about running clubs. Always, the bar tails off at 1:45, from 1:45 on. Now, you can have all sorts of theories for that, whether it's, my opinion is, Irish people, they know when they've had enough. But that's the same throughout Europe. They'll do it at home with drink the bar.
It's based on, you know, the model everybody knows now, which is close at 2:30.
Many thanks to Kai Mira, Greg Dowling, Emer O'Connor, Owen Cregan, Conor Lynch, Desi Balmer, Al Keegan, Colm Kenefic, Michael McKenna, Sean O'Neill, Michelle O'Neill Ring, Cyan, Trevor O'Shea and John Mahan, who took part in this programme. And many thanks to everyone who helped me and took part in this series. Thanks to Michael McKenna for the signature tune, and thanks to Near FM, especially to Paul Loughran and Kieran Murray for their help to make this happen. I'm going to leave you now with some future thoughts from Greg Dowling. I'm Aoife Ní Chonaill Fhoill.
I think to get outside of Ireland to be playing around the world or doing things, you must be producing music, unless you're an absolutely stunning DJ. You know, there's so much competition. There's so many DJs in the world. And so, if I play in a club, there'll be a guy on before me, and I go, God almighty, he's so good. And, you know, you'd be thinking, how's he going after him? And you get a lot of these young guys, and they're super smooth mixing and beautiful track selection. You think, wow, it's really difficult, you know, for anybody to break through. So I think you make music. If we hadn't started making music and making tunes, we wouldn't have got where we are now. You know, we would be stuck, you know, in like just constantly going around Ireland in a loop. You know, it's a big world out there. And I think there's plenty of talent here. The new generation now have definitely, in the last 3 or 4 years, I see a lot more people making music, and they're getting tracks out and they're doing it themselves. Now, the equipment has become cheaper. It's easier. You know, you can do practically everything inside in the box. Like initially, like our first investment, like it was about 10 or 15 grand we had to spend on a desk and monitors and all that kind of thing just to get to a kind of a certain standard. there that we could, you know, make music, where it's probably much easier now. The achievement is to get it out there, I suppose, and get people to listen to it and to keep making it and to keep making better music. You're never happy. You always think, okay, that track is good, but I've got much better tracks coming up. It's lovely to get that kind of reaction about your music, but that's not the reason you do it. You know, I think something else drives it on, you know, drive your own kind of competition with yourself almost, you know, to make better music, to get better at this thing, to learn more, to become, you know, more expansive, to have the music doing something, not just a load of loops on the thing, you know, to learn about your musical side of things and chord progressions and all that kind of stuff. You're almost in competition with yourself. Music is funny like that. You're always trying to make better things, and just hopefully you will make better music sometimes, you know. So, you know, we've invested money in our studio, you know, we've got a better and better sound. I think we're getting better at writing the music. We don't waste time. You know, before we could put dark alleys, whereas now we're kind of, I think we're getting to the point much quicker and writing music, you know, using our time very well. I see, you know, hopefully I'll be still in the studio in 10 years' time, you know, making music. I'm not exactly sure where it will lead to, but we could, you know, just hopefully go on somewhere else, you know.